And welcome back to Deep Thinking with Ed Sorbo and Michael Gugis, where you hear all about motorcycle road racing, the finest sport on the planet, and exactly what Ed and I think about it, and what you should be thinking if you have the common sense to agree with both of us.
Even episode number four.
Even if we disagree with each other.
If I agree with Michael, I change my opinion immediately. So we left off talking about how the model of racing has changed in its entirety.
Mm-hmm.
How we race, what we race, where we race.
Who's racing.
Everything. All
right?
Of it.
You know, the clubs out there with Formula 60 classes now.
Yeah, we never had that.
No.
Right? I mean, I remember when it was a big deal that we added Formula 40.
40, right?
Which actually says a lot. And this is echoed in Rossi's career.
Yeah.
Right? It used to be that nobody could run that long.
No,
they were all fucked up. They were burnt
dead out.
They were scared to death.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. So that is definitely a positive indicator.
You know, Bernie Ecclestone complained about that in Formula 1. He said the problem is that they used to be that there was always an opening on a factory team every year because somebody would be dead, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like real good. That's a problem.
The British have a toast about that. The British Navy, here's to sick wars and sickly seasons. When the officers above you die off, there's room for promotion. The British Navy actually has a different toast for each day of the week.
Do they really?
Yeah, when you give a toast on Monday, you're supposed to say whatever there is. You can find the list on Wikipedia.
Dear God, no wonder they lost an empire. Instead of actually fighting a war, they're coming up with toasts.
Yeah, they didn't do too bad.
Yeah,
you know, Greenwich Mean Time, the zero medium is still in England.
They had a good run. Granted, you know. And they've got a decent Superbike series, so they can't be all bad.
And they started us.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. Yeah. Not bad at all. And you know what? Have you ever been to a formal tea?
I have not, but I think it would be fun.
It is actually a pretty freaking cool way of killing an hour, okay? Especially because the women look good.
I love hats.
You don't have to wear one.
I love hats on women.
All right, we're going to keep this PG. Where are we going? Right, so everything's changed.
We're still trying to run the races though it hasn't
exactly,
changed.
Exactly, as though, like you said, wide world of sports, you know, oh, nothing better to do. Anyway, you had mentioned something last time, and it was the premise that one of the ways that we can make professional road racing in the United States better is by making better club series racing.
Absolutely,
club level
that's
racing.
The foundation,
and semi,
right?
And semi-pro racing.
Yeah.
I miss semi-pro racing. I miss the Formula USA guys. And
that's a perfect example of the economy shrinking, right? There just isn't room for dividing up the pro guys into semi-pro and pro.
I'm gonna put you on the spot.
Yeah.
Is the WIRA National Televised Series next year, are they going to succeed or fail?
Man, they can succeed.
Okay.
There's so many things out of their control. If they set a realistic goal, in other words, the way I want to watch TV,
okay,
the way I do watch TV now,
uh-huh,
is on my computer.
Right.
If you give me what I want, when I want it, I'm more than happy to pay a reasonable price.
Okay.
I paid for the MotoGP pass this year,
okay,
and I'm going to pay for it again next year. And it's the best $150 I spent in the category of racing, hands down, for a long time. So, you know, it used to be that if you got your show on the broadcast TV, it was on one of three or four channels,
right,
and a lot of people watched it.
Right.
And so, hence, you couldn't get it on there.
Right.
The NFL took it all. Now, you can get onto TVs by being on cable, which means I haven't even been able to watch the Superbike shootout. First of all, I don't have cable.
Oh, right.
Right? You got to have the right cable. Internet. So you can have a great show and only a small part of your audience. So if it's available on the internet,
right,
then I'll get to watch it. And I have no doubt that they're going to find a crew of people that can have enough cameras out there and they can get the raw footage,
right,
and they can cut and paste and put it together. If they follow the model of the Canadian Superbike Series,
mm-hmm,
they cannot fail.
That
is hand down works.
That works.
But if they try to force it to be on TV, won't. They won't. They don't have enough money.
So if they run 10 races, you think they'll draw a decent grid? And if it's an attractive rules package, which is unlimited, which, as we've talked about, often actually winds up being a cheaper way of going racing.
Oh, by far. When
fewer rules are...
Every time you try to limit what people can do, there's a club somewhere in mid-America, Colorado-ish area. They got a class for XR100s, and their rule is you can't do anything to the shock. Nothing. You have to use the stock shock. Well, and the body of that shock is welded, so you can't even take it apart and revalve it,
right,
and put it back together like a normal non-rebuildable shock. And so there's a guy right now on the Wira board who's asking how he can drain the oil out of the shock and refill the thicker oil and put an air valve. And it's possible to do what he's going to try to do.
Right.
He's talking about buying 3 or 4 different used XR100 shocks so he can try different thicknesses of oil. And, you know, just let the guy buy a $200 economy shock and be done with it. This is a ridiculous rule, right?
Well,
why is it good to have guys that weigh 4 times more than the bike was intended to carry, wiggle-woggling, bouncing around, bending their spokes? Let them spend $200, $300 on a shock. It's not the end of the world, for
right,
crying out loud. So there's a perfect example.
Yeah.
You tried to make it be cheaper, and you just shot yourself in the foot.
Now,
so, yeah.
Okay, got it.
And any TV show, any media show that you want to put together,
right,
if you have decent cameras and decent cameramen and editing, whatever,
right,
you can zoom in tight enough to make your show look good.
Oh, yeah.
If your grid's only got 6 guys on it and 3 of them are battling hammer and tongs for the whole race, don't show the whole empty grid. Just show the 6 guys on the start and the 3 guys, right?
I don't need 40 bikes on the grid.
What you need is a way to get the drama that is inherent in what we do, the
right,
human drama, out there, right? One of the things that was great about the AMA series when I was running it, and Formula USA, was they had the same announcer at most of the events.
Right.
Wira had Glenn Billings. What
okay,
a great name for an announcer. He was a postman who took time off, and he went to all the national races.
Okay.
And he knew all the regular guys, and he knew our stories. And he could tell us that he knew who had 12 flat tires under the weight of the race, right?
Right.
And he could tell that stuff on the PA system.
Yes.
And it got included into the TV show that they were doing at the time.
So
right?
that makes a package that works.
Yeah.
Somebody who knows the narrative, the backstory.
Exactly.
Like, exactly. Okay.
Right.
That works.
So they can totally succeed. And they have, see, the genius thing of Wira is that they have a minimum standard that they maintain. They have
right,
John Ulrich's McDonald's thing down perfect.
Right.
If you go to McDonald's anywhere in the world and you order a Big Mac, it's the same thing.
Get a Big Mac.
You go to any Wira race, anywhere across the country, you get the same service, the same classes, the same everything, and you know what you can expect.
Right.
Right? That's all that we need. Then
yeah,
we can, then we, oh, I need to bring a generator because there's no power at that track. Well,
right,
we know it, right?
The great thing about it, I know we're going to spend a lot of time. We both like Colin Fraser up, who has not only kept Canadian Superbike alive in tough times, but has actually, you know, done a really nice job with it.
And
one of the things I like about his TV productions, because I've never had a chance to be up there live, but I do like watching his stuff. He's got his own YouTube channel. The races are broadcast. And the cool thing is, if you know what you're looking at, I think it's shot by like 2 cameras, like the whole race. But they position the cameras so you can get close-ups from this corner, and then you can get that same camera can catch another part of the track. And you just do a little thinking.
That's the kind of thing that you get when you have a really experienced guy, right, Colin?
Right.
Colin was a racer himself. He's been there and done that, from winning races to blowing up his bike to getting hurt, all of that shit.
Right.
And he's also been doing this program for a long time, so he learns all the stuff he could do. And the economy is such that he has to get by with a few less cameras than he used to. But we now have GoPros.
Right.
And he's got a camera on all of the pertinent bikes.
Right.
And the beauty, this is what I love about his series. The thing he's done perfect throughout, from when he started,
okay,
is that he's correctly analyzed the reality that he's in,
right,
and provided what was needed by the principals within the constraints of what their universe was.
Right.
Right? If you live in Canada, you have a third of the economy of the United States. It's unfair to compare us to them.
Right.
Right? You have these tracks that you can go to. Your choices are race or don't race.
Yeah.
The tracks that are dangerous, they don't race at. The tracks that they can race at, they do. Okay, so the, all of that stuff is going on. And the reality is that the cost to go from tape delayed mm-hmm. to live is exponentially.
Huge.
It's massive. You
right.
can't even think about it. So he has a fantastic show that comes out a week later, which means you get all your shit back together. And I've been there at the studio, and there it's a madhouse, right?
Right?
He's got guys who come in during that week, and they all have a job, and they're all doing it. And the guy's in the studio, and he's doing the words over and blah, blah, blah,
right.
And it works. And it means that you are guaranteed to show all the important stuff.
Right.
Because you watch all your footage, and you saw the race, and you know, okay, we got to make sure we get that pass that Jody put on Zoke. That
right.
was awesome, right? You know? And you got to make sure you get that comment on the podium where the guy called the other guy Wally, right? And by the way, in Canada, Wally is like really derogatory.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, Wally.
Yeah, it's like calling somebody Googes.
So
anyway, they put together this great show. It's based on the reality that they're in. They don't try to make pretense
right.
of what they're not, yada, yada, yada.
You know what? They do a little thing with the speed camera. It's just, it's a camera that just sits at the edge of the track.
Ain't that great footage?
It's freaking awesome. You cut it in every now and then.
Dude, we had one of those cameras get whacked by somebody's knee and go flying through the sky. We had to find all the pieces after the race was over. That was a really good shot up until
right up to the
that camera
exactly.
turned off.
It was going great right up to
His
that
knee
moment.
Looks kind of, whoa! Anyway, yeah, that's a beautiful model, and Weir is in a great place to copy that.
Okay.
And Weir is smart enough, most importantly, to add whatever they're going to add without detracting from what they're already doing. Right?
Right.
Their grassroots thing is what matters to them.
Yes.
And you want to add your new thing without messing up what you had. So they're
right.
going to do their national races, which include regional club classes. So
mm-hmm.
you got racing going on the whole time. Everybody knows, listen, if there's a problem, these are the premier things. We're
mm-hmm.
going to cut over here and whatever. They've got... I would venture that there is not a catastrophe that can happen, a problem that can come up at a race weekend that has not happened and been dealt with at a WIRA race multiple ways to where the guys in the control tower can go, well, you know, we had this problem back in 82,
right.
and we did this, and that wasn't quite as good as how we solved it in 84, so, right? You know, so you pull from your playbook and you go forward
you
with
know,
it.
You know, it's funny you mentioned it. One of my favorite racing experiences was the one of the WIRA Nationals that I went to. It was combined with WIRA West. And I'm in the paddock. I'm looking around. There's a whole bunch of semis up there because some of those guys that race that series are well-funded, incredibly talented racers. And it felt like, you know, you felt like you were part of the show. Now, I knew I wasn't the focus of the show, but I also felt like, as a club racer and a guy who loves this sport, it was like buying the best ticket on the planet. It was like, okay, there's the general admission, then there's the grandstand seat, and then there's the VIP package, and for the VIP package, you get to race!
Yes, absolutely.
That was way cool.
The other version of that for the next step down folks who can't race
mm-hmm.
is you incorporate a track day within your racing.
I think that's great.
Or you have it the Monday after or the Thursday before or whatever, so people actually, you know, are a participant.
Right.
As opposed to just a passive spectator.
Yeah.
And so what we're talking about here is how do we at the club level modify what we're doing? And the first
right.
step is to accept the reality. You have to walk around in the pits and look around and see what's really there,
mm-hmm.
not what you hope to be there.
Right.
Right? And humans are unbelievably adept at seeing what they want to see.
Oh, we're real good at that.
And fooling themselves right. into thinking that they are seeing the reality. You have to ask yourself constantly, am I in the real world or am I in my fantasy world?
Right.
So how do we do this in a practical level? Right? We have our rules that
right.
we can use to change what things are done. We have our class structure
right.
that we can modify for this kind of stuff. We have pricing. We have how we get new people to come to the racetrack. We have how do we get rid of bad people?
Yes.
Just something that doesn't get thought about very much. We
yeah.
have how do we enforce the rules? The current model, except at the pro level, is to let the racers, the customers, enforce the rules.
Right.
Maybe it's time for the clubs to enforce their own rules.
Can you imagine watching an NBA game where the players got to call fouls on each other?
They used to do that. It used to be that you called your own foul and you raised your arm.
No. I mean, your opponent calls a foul.
In the Frisbee game called Ultimate,
right?
You don't have referees. And the person with the clearest view of the situation is used as a referee. Okay. But it all starts with the pretext that it's a game of honor. And when you accidentally break the rules or step out of bounds or whatever, that, you know, you go, oh, sorry, stepped out of bounds. Or the other person, hey, man, you stepped out. Oops, sorry. And you stop and you do whatever the penalty is. Or in the case of Ultimate, there's no penalty.
Right.
The disc just changes sides.
Okay.
So you can absolutely do that. But I would argue that if you're a club, I understand that you don't want to enforce the rules on the people who then won't give you money because they can't race with you because they're cheating.
But that...
I submit that if you enforce the rules, more people will come to your clubs because they don't like have to enforce the rules themselves.
Yes.
And they want to see that the guy who's cheating is being taken care of.
Every
time. The cost benefit is in your advantage to kick the bad apple out.
Every time I've protested somebody, it's just been a huge drama.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been wrong on a protest.
And I understand that it's difficult to do. And at the pro level, they have to have a whole staff of people. Then they have to, teams have to have a staff of people to do the actual teardowns. It's not simple.
Right.
But you start with the easy cases and you go forward from there. And I've got a great example for you. Back in the Hawaii Road Race Association, we had multiple classes. Mm-hmm. We ran all the small bikes, 600 and below, in one group. And all the big bikes, 600 above 600 in a second group. So within the second group would be open GP and open SS.
Okay.
So the guy with an open megaphone pipe, which is not legal in open SS, is signing up for open GP and open SS. Both classes are on the track at the same time. He gets two races for going on the track once, but he pays for both of them.
Right.
And so multiple times, we point out to him that his open megaphone pipe is illegal in SS and you need to get a muffler on it. He doesn't do it. So finally, after the end of a weekend, while I'm doing the points, I DQ him from open SS because his bike is illegal and only score him for open GP. And the club keeps his money because he signed up and he knew it was against the rules. So, of course, that pisses him off. The next month, he shows up with a muffler on his bike. He's now legal in both classes because he has a muffler. His bike runs better. He goes a freaking half a second a lap faster than he ever went before. Right? So it was good all around.
Right.
We didn't lose the guy. The other people weren't pissed off. He was happy. You know, it can be done.
And granted, it's easy for us to spend other people's money. Yep. To say you have to be willing to turn down a customer. But
the other side of this is you write rules that you can enforce.
Right. And you know, we at Chuckwalla, when I was part of the administrative team there, I remember, was it Steve Rapp? Was it Rapp that I DQ'd? I think it was.
Yeah, you told me the story. Yeah, his bike wasn't even close to legal.
It was visually illegal from 50 yards away. Those are the rules you write. You don't worry about.
Well, even if you don't write those rules that way, you at least start enforcing the obvious stuff.
Yeah, you know, and stop thinking, well, did it make a difference as to where he finished? Well, how much money do they spend?
No, it's right or wrong, and that's it.
You have to, exactly.
Because there's going to be more people who are going to support you and pay you entry because your club is doing the right thing than who the number of people who will be happy because you got a special buddy treatment. The special buddy treatment is the beginning of the devil's work. It's the slippery slope. You can't have two sets of rules. You can't let so-and-so stand on the pit wall because he's somebody's friend, and everybody else isn't supposed to stand on the pit wall. The rules have to be for everybody.
Okay.
But instead of beating up on anybody, I don't want anybody to feel like we're picking on a specific club or a specific part of rules.
Yeah, because you're all guilty.
Exactly. What we're saying is,
you're all
Wallies. Look at the way you're approaching racing. See. And most of us are doing something just because that's the way we only know how.
Okay, question. One of the ways that we used to do it, make it easy for people to get involved, production class. Show up, tape up your headlight, bolt a couple of number plates on, have fun. Okay?
So those classes existed. If you look at pictures of old racing in the 80s, you'll see bikes with their fenders still on the bike.
Right.
Those rules were driven by the manufacturer supplying contingency money, and they wanted the bikes to be production.
Okay.
And yes, we should have production classes, not because we want to make the hurdle to get into racing lower, because it should be difficult for you to line up and risk my life.
Okay.
Right? You got to have safety wire, you have to have safety gear, etc. But nowadays, bikes don't require very much to be raceable.
Right.
I mean, the suspension's good, the gearing's good, the power's good, the map is good. You can go run the bike. Hell, they don't even need steering dampers to handle decently anymore.
No.
So,
and half of them come with steering dampers.
If we had a production class, it would be a way for guys to come in at the low level. And listen, if you have a production class that says the bike's got to be stock, stock exhaust, stock everything,
right?
You don't have to worry very much about cheating.
No.
You put big pistons in your 600, you turn it into a 750 by boring it out and whatever, you still got the stock 600 exhaust system. Ain't going to go much faster.
Not going to go much faster.
And then it's probably going to smoke because you probably did something wrong because you're a cheating bastard and we're going to catch you. 2 minute warning.
Already?
Yes.
Holy crap, what are we going to talk about?
What was it?
I don't know.
Double points.
No, we did that last time.
We did that last time.
You know what? Let's beat up on double points again.
Double points is the work of the devil. It's horrible.
Wow. Hey, let me wrap it up. Here's your 2 minute warning. Okay. Is a production class actually counterproductive given the fact that you're trying to attract people who have modified their bikes to go ride on the street and do track days?
Well, yeah, a lot of people nowadays already have an exhaust system and stuff, and that is probably one of the strong reasons that we don't have it. Okay, instead of a production class, let's have a time challenge class.
Oh, street bike class, a whole bunch of things. I gotta say, I love the idea of a pro or a pro-am series that runs with a track day. That is so freaking cool. It would be so awesome to be the guy in the garage across the pit lane from Josh Hayes. You know?
He's a genius. His name is Michael Gugis.
It's Ed Sorbo.
We are thinking deeply.
And
we'll see you next time. Aloha.